You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Andrea Scrima. She's in Berlin right now. Andrea, thanks so much for talking with me today.
It's great to talk to you, Brainerd.
So, Andrea, let's talk about what you're working on now. I know you're working on a novel, perhaps. So, can you tell me a little bit about where you're at right now or what's going on?
Yes, I'm working on revisions for my third book, which would become hopefully my second published book. I just finished the revisions for the first half of the book yesterday, so I'm kind of right in the middle of it right now, and it's a very intense process. Sometimes when you've been working on something for many years and the text is not a third or a fourth draft, but it's a 15th or 20th draft, it becomes so seamless that you don't always know where to enter the text, and I had sensed that some things were missing. And I wasn't quite sure what it was, and it eventually dawned on me that I didn't understand what was missing because I hadn't, in fact, written it yet. And it took me a half a year to understand that basic fact. And once I got around that little hurdle, I understood a bit more about what I had set out to do. So hopefully, in the next half year or so, I'll be done with this and start sending it out.
That's so interesting. The process of revisions is so interesting. Was missing, was that by yourself just looking over it, or were you getting feedback? Like, how does that work?
It was a combination. It was a combination. I actually sent the manuscript out last fall because I was firmly convinced that I had finally finished this book, because it had been the way books tend to be. They become burdens after a while, and you kind of want to get them out of the door, you know, at some point. And I sent it out, and I got some very, very good feedback with a lot of praise and some comments of like, well, I'm not quite following the story. And I waited until I got enough answers where I could see if there was a consensus or if their criticism made any sense. And so the way it normally is, you wait and see if it makes sense. You wait for your own resistance to kind of break down if the criticism comes on a level that, let's say, understands what you're trying to do and wants you to do it better, that's when it starts to make sense. And that was actually the case. And I got quite a bit out of that first round of submissions.
And so can you tell us a little bit about, I mean, I know it's early and we don't have to, we could talk about other books, but can you tell us anything about the trajectory of the book or how it maybe compares to your past books in terms of content?
Yeah, it's actually a very complicated book, and I'm trying to sort of streamline it formally so that it seems simple in a lot of ways. There's a number of different narratives sort of interwoven, and it's set up more or less as a diptych, so there's really a first half and a second half, and the two halves hinge like a two-part painting, really. There's a line in between. There's a kind of an invisible line where something is missing, and this is how I very much envision the form of the book. What can I say about it? It's basically a story based on a woman's life. Some of the biographical material is taken from my life, but it's not really autobiographical because I've made a lot of things up, actually invented characters and invented stories, but I've borrowed enough from my own life so that it could seem like an overlap in certain areas. So basically, it's a story of a woman's life with in three different times of her life, with between 10 and 15 years in between. And
is it set both in New York? Yeah, I'm sorry, go on. Set both in New York and Berlin?
Yeah, it goes from New York to Berlin and then back to New York again. And it's a pretty heavy family story. It's, I suppose, partly psychological. There are a number of characters in the book that are each traumatized in their own kind of way, without, let's say, trauma being written with a capital T. It's a more subtle kind of trauma that I'm trying to get at in a way. One of the characters is a former East German who's actually the boyfriend of a younger version of the narrator, who was in juvenile prison for a number of years. So there's this one particular kind of politically induced trauma, let's say, and what the effects of that can be. And then there's sort of run-of-the-mill family trauma, let's say. And then there are a number of family secrets that sort of come dribbling out as the character, as the narrator, rather, begins to delve into journals that her deceased father left behind. So this comes in the second part of the book, which is structurally very different than the first half of the book.
Oh, that's fascinating. So she finds the journals, and that's kind of becomes a way of revising the past or understanding in a different way. That's interesting. Actually, that's the second half of the book, the journals.
Yeah, it's a kind of an interweaving of quotes from the journals, which are not journals in the normal sense of, let's say, I did this today, and then I did this, and this is how I felt doing it. They're very laconic kind of chronicles that have an almost humoristic kind of quality, because they're reduced to an absurd kind of sequence of facts, everything sort of from world political events, let's say the Cuban Missile Crisis, to the price of a filter for the refrigerator or something like that, you know, $8.99 plus tax, and then everything sort of added out to the very last digit. There's something quite ordinary and also quite bizarre about these journals, and she really milks them for whatever truth they can yield, and actually does discover that some things can be staring you in a way, as it is in every family, some things can be staring you right in the face, and for decades nobody will see it or know it or want to know it, perhaps. So she develops a kind of an obsessive relationship to the this kind of very pared down data in these chronicles, and it's the kind of paring down of language that I use in this part of the book is reflects this. It was actually the most enjoyable part of the book to write. It was quite a lot of fun.
That sounds interesting to write. And I mean, we can talk a little bit about Berlin and the art. What else, what are you seeing there in terms of the arts? And I want to talk a little bit about your involvement there in terms of Berlin and art. What are you seeing, and how do you like the community of let's say, artists and writers in Berlin as opposed to New York? And how are you engaged there?
Well, I don't know if I can really compare it to New York. I grew up in New York, but I haven't really been living there on a regular basis for so many years that I don't really feel that I can compare the two cities so much. I mean, Berlin is really my hometown in a lot of ways. I've been here for more than 30 years, so it's a bit difficult. I write in English. I conduct most of the rest of my life here in German, so it's and I'm kind of straddling cultures in a way. I'm trained really as a visual artist. I've been a visual artist my whole life, and it was actually my art that led me into writing. I was working on very large-scale text installations for a good 10 years in the 90s, so the writing emerged in my art and led me through these large choreographed kind of spaces with stories that I was writing for them, you know, into the logical question of when am I going to see if this is going to work in a literary context, basically. So I was established.
You mean ideas from your visual art, which was a text-oriented, often text-based. When would that actually lead into writing books like you are? Is that what you're saying?
I was taking stories that were maybe, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 words long, and spending months trying to get funding to have the computer stencils made to paint all of these letters on the walls of large spaces and things like that. The amount of organization to put on exhibitions for these text installations seemed it got to the point where it seemed like it was almost absurd, that it was a bit out of proportion to the thing that I wanted to spend more of my time doing, which was writing. I wanted that to be it became clear at some point that writing had started gradually to replace what my process was, which had been painting for many, many years. It sort of merged into writing, and I didn't want to spend 80 percent of my time doing administration work and looking for funding and so on and so forth, and maybe only 20% of my time doing the actual writing. And I thought that I was moving into a literary direction, and I wanted to know if I could make it work in another context. And of course, when you're changing, let's say, mid-career, you know, from being an artist to being a writer who nobody has ever heard of before, it was a bit of a challenge. You know, even the transition was very organic from my point of view, from my own work. It came about out of the logic of my own work or the progression of my own work. But I found myself catapulted into another profession all of a sudden as an absolute beginner, basically. And it changed. It also changed a lot about how I felt about being in Berlin. I wasn't sure if it meant that I had to move back, because I'm writing in English. My colleagues are theoretically there and not here being Berlin, you know. And right. it was a bit of a crisis for a while. My son was very small, so it was kind of clear that I could survive better here as a mother and freelance translator, basically, than if I moved back to New York City and tried to make all of that work there. So, but it changed a lot of different things about my life, this transition into writing, and it also it actually very, very much changed my relationship to my feeling of being here, because I had been very much a part of the Berlin art scene in the 90s, and all of a sudden I felt like I was in exile. I was not writing for, let's say, the German literary world, but I was really trying to write my way back home in a kind of funny way, and It felt strange.
A whole different group, right? I mean, I remember thinking myself. I was going. It was actually quite a while ago, and I was doing some writing for the Brooklyn Rail. But you know, I'm primarily a visual artist, and I took my mother to this Brooklyn Rail party where it was just. I mean, I may feel differently about all of this now, but then it was all writers there, and I remember thinking how distinct the group of writers were from artists, and that. As I went around and started meeting people, and again, this may be just my bias at the moment, but it struck me that writers were all talking about ideas and mm-hmm. things, and artists were talking about their art primarily.
Yeah.
And it was so kind of refreshing to actually be in the – I like both groups, of course, but it was great to be in the group of writers who are always talking about other interesting things. You know, it was a very different kind of world, though, it seemed.
Yeah, sure. It's not 100% sort of focused on, well, what I'm doing now is this, you know. Although it's hard to make that generalization. I know a lot of people, and more actually, that are straddling these different creative areas. In fact, the more people I talk to about it, the more I discover that they're not just a musician, but they're kind of also secretly writing a book, or they're also trying to do this, or they're doing this other thing. You know, if you're deeply creatively involved and have been for a long time, I think it just almost naturally spills over into other areas. And I think that we're all multi-talented, whether we enact those parallel talents. I mean, maybe talent isn't really the right word. I think maybe it's just a predisposition to be able to transform some kind of portion of your life experience or your daily experience through some kind of filter into some other thing, into some other kind of form. And I think that once you've figured out how to do that in one form, it becomes quite natural to do that in other forms, if they're available.
Right, but the difference is the other groups may not see it that way. Like with the way you're saying now is, to me, that's the land, the ground of a visual artist, right? As a visual artist, you can kind of move into any terrain. You feel like this could carry you anywhere. You could become an architect, a designer, and anything, really. Whereas writers don't necessarily feel that same way, I mean, except within the medium, you know what I mean? So there's this sense that I see as a visual artist of, yeah, of course it makes sense that this is leading me to a new medium or non-medium or whatever it is. But then you were saying when you get into that world of writers and writing and getting support there, it is truly like a new world and a new platform, because everybody in that world obviously hasn't just transitioned from other arts or humanities or something. That's probably right.
I think probably what you're trying to get at also, there's something different about the word, you know, words, language. There's something very
Right.
What's the word? I find it very difficult.
It's the opposite of sort of my painting says it all for me, you know, or my painting says it all, whether it does or not. Artists can say that.
A writer can't
the same way. There's nothing to your words are, I think, kind of lay you much more bare in a way. They're make you much more accountable almost.
Yeah, it could be. I think my perspective will always be from the artist turned writer in a way. And when I'm really only writing for many, many, many months without any studio work in between at all, if I actually go to the studio and draw, I'm flabbergasted that I can just do this thing and I can just take pencils and work on paper without some kind of major architecture, you know, major plot kind of going on, or without, you know, years of piecemeal kind of, you know, wringing the blood out of the stone kind of work. I mean, I'm really, really amazed at the immediacy of art making when I'm allowed to even engage in it anymore, because I'm writing
it's
a very, very, like, exacting kind of thing, you know.
So let's talk for a minute, if we can, about how do you begin a novel and sketch it out? Like, the equivalent of what you said, it's true. It's such a different process. You go to the studio, you make art, you experiment, and, you know, finger paint, whatever. But to sketch out a novel, does it all happen within your head, or do you write everything down in a certain way to have an outline, or no?
I don't know if I'm the right writer to ask that, because my relationship to story is a very ambivalent one. So to be honest, I feel like my writing comes, my approach to writing, or approach to language and words and writing, the process of writing, I feel comes very much from my art making, that I have no ideas to work from. I have no other incentive than to try to immerse myself in the writing process, which was once the painting process. In other words, I seek this kind of experience where I'm delving for something or diving for something and trying to find something. And I'm most excited about writing when I'm in that kind of process, where it's a one-to-one kind of thing. I'm actually trying to get at something with words, and I might
there isn't a type of planning, in other words. There isn't a kind of...
No, the planning comes afterwards. I feel like I need quite a lot of material in front of me that I've written, and then I ask myself, well, what is this stuff, you know? And then the ideas begin to emerge from the material itself. It's sort of like getting something onto the canvas and then having a look and then understanding where you are, what you want to try to do with that. And then the ideas emerge, the themes emerge, the motifs emerge, the leitmotifs emerge, the structure emerges from that. You know, the form actually becomes the most important part of it all. When I was writing my first book, A Lesser Day, I had actually just had my son, so I had an infant to take care of, and I was nursing him, and I had little bits of time in between nursing, and so really I worked in a very fragmentary way, and I wrote shorts, and I did this for quite a number of months, and it was really only after maybe 9 or 10 months of writing and, you know, massing a few hundred pages of material that I began to see that a structure was emerging. And one day I sat down and wrote a short fragment and realized that this was how the book would end. And once I saw how the book would end, then I understood a lot more about what it was about. But there was still quite a lot of exploration there in terms of finding the form. And then filling out the form also meant making it more precise and understanding what the narrative was in a much more precise way. It all sounds a bit... formal. I'm hearing myself explaining
it sounds like a visual artist approach. As you were saying, it does sound
like an
artist approach.
You know, a
way of kind of moving the materials around like that. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. But what I have realized after years and years and years of writing is that I've had to catch up on quite a lot of things, understanding how to make narrative work, how to keep the architecture of a 350-page novel in your head. You know, I've tried all kinds of things, and little bits of paper and, you know, like summaries and this and that and timelines, and none of it works for me. I have to have everything in my mind. I have to know exactly where everything is, or have an intuitive understanding of all of these interweaving narrative threads. And So for me, the most important part of the process is staying in it and not letting a day go by. I have to touch it every day. If I don't, I get lost very, very, very quickly, and it's very, very hard to get back into it. It's like a parallel world, really, and I feel like I keep going on these digressions. I'm not sure if I remember what your question was.
No, that was clear. Right. You were talking about the parallel world of how even the words and writing is built, and that was it's great to talk about that because it kind of blends so much of what we've been talking about, from art to how you approach writing. Andrea, it's great talking to you. I'd love to talk again about more issues, actually. But before we go, I wanted to ask you what books you're reading now.
I've been reading quite a lot of things lately, but the one that's really right on my desk in front of me is called Passages by Anne Quinn, who's not very, very well known, but she's a very important British avant-garde writer in the 60s, and I would recommend her to anybody who loves, let's say, Virginia Woolf and James Joyce and Nathalie Sarraut and any number of people who are working with language and imagery and aren't as concerned with, let's say, story, narrative, and plot as with trying to recreate in words some semblance of what reality might be if it could be conveyed in words. So I don't know if that makes a lot of sense, but she's fabulous, and she's undeservedly quite unknown, except for some recent recognition that she's gotten. A recent edition of the fabulous magazine Literature and Music and Literature, it's a beautiful magazine, has recently done an issue partly based on Anne Quinn's work, and I recommend that to anybody who's curious. She's absolutely wonderful. Wonderful.
And what
wonderful
magazine
writer.
Is that you're talking about? That was
Music and Literature.
We're talking really, I mean, you're about writing and how your writing's built, and as an artist thinking about it, and I think that's interesting. You know, I interviewed a guy the other day, Bruce Bauman, a writer, who talked about kind of the same thing, how, you know, in a different way, he just kind of jumps into the novel, and then he starts putting up all the pages all over his studio, like, so he can actually see
right.
the entire thing. You know,
right.
And he even teaches a class in writing and doesn't believe in, you know, outlines or anything, just sort of go for it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So, yeah, that made sense.
I think every writer writes in a completely different way. I don't think there's a formula that works, or, you know, I have a deep mistrust of this notion that there's some way to write, because we're all very, it's the same in art, really. Everything is I think what matters the most is somehow that the process of writing matches your needs and your abilities in some kind of way, that you're not sort of fighting against yourself somehow, you know. But
there is something about throwing out the rules a little bit too. That's freeing and a little more. I don't know if that's visual art inspired, but I recently saw Werner Herzog saying, you know, he's teaching some kind of class on filmmaking online, and
yeah,
one of the things
that
was storyboards are for cowards. You know, it was kind of wonderful, and this idea of just, as I understand, he was saying, just go for the completely, you know, sumptuous visual experience. The actor, everything. Who cares about everything else? And another line he said, when a student comes up to me and says, I've shot over 1,200 hours of film, he said, my heart sinks.
these are apodictic things. I mean, these are people that so many people admire because they've done amazing works of art. You know, they've created amazing films. And so you think what they say must be true, but it's everybody has to find their own. You know, I mean, you can become a storyboard fetishist, basically, and that's exactly where your major energy derives from. You know what I mean? It's hard. I don't know. I found it very hard to find my own way. I mean, the first book that I wrote, A Lesser Day, it was like a kind of a miracle. It just kind of dropped out of me like an egg, if you know what I mean. I thought this was what writing was like. I thought that, you know, I would sit down, and these words would stream out of me, and then I would eventually find the form, and the form would miraculously meet my expectations and needs of that time, and it worked out beautifully, you know. And the book that I'm working on now has been the polar opposite of that. It's been like trying to perform self-surgery. You know, I've been working on it for more than 10 years, on and off. It's been a nightmare, you know. But it's a novel, and it's probably more complicated in structure and so on and so forth. But it's not. I feel like I need to. I feel like writing becomes reinvented with each book, unless you're a formulaic kind of novelist who's essentially always writing the same thing, you know.
Interesting
writers that interest me are looking for something in their writing. They're looking for a challenge. They're looking to probe language that bit further to see if there's another shred of light that can be kind of lit into the crack somehow. You know, it's like we're always trying to push the boundaries to see if we can get. You know what I mean. As an artist, it's like you're pushing and pushing, and you don't know what it is you're trying to get at. But what you want is some glimmer of a sense of what it feels like to be alive. You know, some kind of reflection of this existential conundrum that faces us all the time. Something that makes you feel like you're actually living, and that it bears some kind of resemblance, let's say, to the form that you've chosen for this kind of thing. And I think that if this is the kind of art that you're trying to make, it's not going to be the same each time. It's going to be a new adventure each time. And I've had my ass kicked in a major way by this book, so it's a big deal for me to be close to finishing it now. So with any luck, I'll be submitting it again next year.
Andrea, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your writing, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much, Brainerd. It was wonderful talking to you, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.